From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on NBC's Meet the Press when former longtime anchor Tom Brokaw made comments about, in his words, Hispanics and assimilation. Brokaw said that conservatives in the Donald Trump era have told him they are taking a hard stance on Latin American immigration because, as Brokaw tells it, they don't know whether they want brown grandbabies. His conclusion was not that this was a problem caused entirely by white people and their racism. Brokaw said, quote, Hispanics should work harder at assimilation, make sure that all of their kids are learning to speak English. He closed by saying that this is a problem that is going to require outreach on both sides. Now, the remarks sparked immediate condemnation, and Brokaw himself has apologized. And here is a vital part of this conversation about assimilation. Most Latino children in this country are not even bilingual. The vast majority of kids age 5 to 17 speak only English at home. Things are changing. But this hour, a discussion about what assimilation means and who gets to decide who has to assimilate, what it looks like. Our guests include Annette Ramos, community connector at Jiva Theater Center and the new artistic director of the Latinx Arts and Culture Center, an association called LACA. Welcome back to the program, Annette.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. Also with us is Tricia Cruz Irving, a longtime local media and communications professional. Welcome back. Nice to have you. And with us is Samantha Parisi, a Latina lawyer practicing personal injury law at Parisi and Bellavia Law Firm. Samantha, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Y saludo a la comunidad latina que nos escucha hoy.
All right. Very good. And before we start this conversation, a brief hello. Bienvenidos to Megan Mack, the producer of Connections, because this is the first day of our winter membership campaign. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. That's correct. It's day one of our fall membership drive, and we want to hear you call 454-6300. And that's because this is a member-driven public station. If you value NPR, if you value WXXI, if you value Connections, you're listening right now, maybe you're a regular Connections listener, you recognize some of the voices you're hearing on the program. If you value what you hear here at WXXI, now's the time to call. We can provide deeper conversations with this hour-long broadcast. That's very rare to find in local media, even in national media. We don't have to tell you what to think here. We just give you all the information that you need to make your own informed decisions and your own opinions. 454-6300. We should also mention that today is New Member Monday. So if you have thought for a while about joining WXXI, now is the time to call because your dollars will be doubled thanks to some friends of the station. 454-6300. You can also go online to WXXI.org. There's a big donate now button there. So if you don't want to turn off Connections, if you don't want to talk to our volunteers on the phone, although they are lovely people, go online. It's quick, it's easy, and you can ensure that Connections will continue to be here for you on WXXI for years to come.
Thank you, Megan. All right. So before we just get some opening thoughts from our guests here, if you missed what Tom Brokaw had to say on Meet the Press, let's listen to him in his own words there.
A lot of this we don't want to talk about, but the fact is, on the Republican side, a lot of people see the rise of an extraordinary, important new constituency in American politics, Hispanics, who will come here and all be Democrats. Also, yeah, I hear when I push people a little harder, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies. I mean, that's also a part of it. It's the intermarriage that is going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other. I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. You know, that they ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all of their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. And that's going to take outreach on both sides, frankly.
Let me start with Tricia Cruz Irving. What did you make of what you heard?
So there are two things that I want to. So one thing I agree with, a small part of it, is all kids who live in the U.S. should know English. And we can elaborate more on that later. And number two, not all Hispanics are Democrats. And a lot of people think that. And I know that there are a lot of Latinos, Hispanics, that are Republicans who feel afraid to come out and say they're Republicans because they're afraid they're going to be judged, they're going to be criticized, they're going to be ostracized. I've said this in the past, that I know Hispanic Republicans who have lost business because other Latinos have said to them, I can't work with you because you're a Republican. And that's just ridiculous to me. And what's just as ridiculous to me is to say that all Latinos should assimilate. And I say that, you know, having experienced that myself, that when I was younger, at one point, feeling that I had to give up who I was and feeling ashamed of who I was, and to this day, still feeling ashamed of having those thoughts, that no child or adult should ever have to feel that way.
When you say give up who you were, if you don't mind, let me just read something here, because I want to understand if this is what the point you're making. This is from Carla Monterosso, the CEO of Code 2040, a nonprofit devoted to diversifying the tech sector. She wrote the following, quote, "Sincerely, the most annoying part of this is how readily we shed Latinx identity in order to assimilate. Latinx people are claiming whiteness. Quite literally, folks hide their identities when they can, so they can be successful. I had one engineer tell me he pretended to be South Asian for as long as he could because of the assumptions made about Latinx people. This is not a healthy way to be in the world," end quote. Is that what you mean?
No, so as an adult, being bilingual, knowing English and Spanish has helped me tremendously. And if I weren't bilingual, I wouldn't be where I am today. I've had great success for the fact that I've been bilingual. But when I was younger, you know, I learned Spanish first. And then when I went to school, and this was, you know, 40 years ago, the teachers told my parents that I needed to learn more English. And I think I was having some problems with certain, like, the R's and certain other letters and syllables. So my dad, who's fully bilingual, he's from Puerto Rico, he spoke to us only in English, but my mom continued to speak to us in Spanish because she didn't really know English, and she's tried to learn it over the years, but it's just very broken, and she could never get that knack for learning the language. So she continued to speak to us in Spanish, thank goodness, because we were able to maintain it. But when I was about, I think maybe 13, I don't remember if it was third grade, between third and maybe fifth or sixth grade, I remember going to the grocery store and asking my mom to lower her voice because I was embarrassed that we were speaking in Spanish. And to this day, I am 44 years old. To this day, I still feel ashamed for feeling that way. And no child, no one should ever have to feel that way. And another example of something that just happened actually last week with my husband, who's Irish and who's very proud of his ethnicity. You know, no one's telling him to assimilate. So he was in the Hall of Justice. He's a lawyer. He was in the Hall of Justice in an elevator, and there were two Hispanic people in there. It was a couple. And he said to me when he got home that night, because he knows some Spanish, and he heard them speaking, and they said a word, and at the beginning he wasn't sure if it was one or the other, and then he realized what it was. They had said either cállate, which means be quiet, or cálmate, which means calm down, or no. Yeah. One or the other, yes. And then he said afterwards, the man said to the woman very briefly, "I'm sorry, but I don't know English." So he realized the woman was saying to him, "Cállate, be quiet." And he wanted to turn around and say, "Está bien, it's okay." And, you know, but he didn't want them to feel uncomfortable. He didn't know how they would take that. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oh my gosh, you should have said that because mm-hmm. that would have made them feel so much better. No one should have to feel as if, you know, they have to hide who they are, or certainly everyone should respect the cultures, you know, and certain things when they're in a different country, but it certainly doesn't mean they should be giving up who they are or their identity."
All right, Annette Ramos.
Wow. There's so many erroneous facts in Tom's statement, and it just perpetuates the stereotype of Hispanics and Latinx people today. So I immediately took personal offense as my own family upbringing, and I remember just the opposite, trying to talk Spanish to my grandmother, and she said to me in perfect articulated Spanish, English, she said, "Mijita, talk English to me." So that was how badly I spoke it. And I do remember that shame of thinking I can't be somebody who I authentically am and culturally am. This idea of assimilation, and let's look at that. Let's look at that word. Mm-hmm. Assimilation means to really to deny one's culture and to blend in some way. And the very essence of American history is about denying and assimilating and denying and assimilating. So I take offense to that word. I would rather have a tossed salad where I can taste all the different flavors than a mushy, grind it down, bland salad. So the idea of assimilation, I think, is in itself needs to be questioned in our culture today. And the idea of integrating and collectively defining in a cauldron of creative culture is what I'm looking at. So that's one. Two, the facts that he quoted were incorrect, and you'll speak a little bit more about that later on, about the actual facts in America today. And the fact that he also said that he's been saying this for years. I expect, and first of all, I'm a baby boomer, a tad older than Tricia here, and I grew up listening to Tom, and he was the go-to guy in my house. When Mommy turned on the TV, we actually listened to TV and news in English. So he was someone I respected and admired. He has a responsibility as a newscaster to make sure that he is sharing facts and not unconscious bias. And that, you know, that's a personal issue. And perhaps he didn't mean it intentionally, but the backlash, and it's just no longer acceptable for media and especially where he is within our media industry as a reporter that is respected, he has a responsibility to inform the public of the facts. So I want to make sure that we today inform the public of the facts, and B, that we also begin a healthy dialogue around it. His apology, although I think it was sincere, is a good start. But now he needs to be at the circles, because remember, I don't do tables anymore. Circles have open spaces that we can throw ideas into. I think he needs to be at those circles and to talk with Latinx leaders and to really say our industry needs to change that perception and that erroneous giving of assumption that this is a fact, because he's wrong.
A couple of things here. Some of the facts that Annette is talking about. Here's data from the Pew Research Center. It shows that the share of Hispanic people speaking Spanish at home has been dropping steadily in this country. Today, some 62% roughly are bilingual. That's the report from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine that found that Hispanics are learning English faster than any other immigrant cohort. Other research shows that Hispanic high school dropout rates have hit a new low. College enrollment is at a new high. They're starting businesses in greater numbers. And the percentage of Latinos, this is very important here, I think, just in terms of relevant understanding of what's happening in this country. The percentage of Latinos age 5 to 17 who say they speak only English at home is 88%. The vast majority of Latino kids in this country only speak English at home. And in a moment, I'm going to ask all of our guests, because the follow-up is that a good thing? It seems to be what people like Tom Brokaw want, but I don't know that that's a good thing. Anyway, the one follow-up for Annette Ramos here is, when you talk about the perception that Brokaw has an unconscious bias. You know, Tricia mentioned this idea that her husband, who is Irish, right? You know, he's not asked to assimilate, whereas Tricia and her mother have been told, you must assimilate because there's more of us than there are of you, is sort of the game that's played in this country. Is it because we always center whiteness? Is that just what happens here? That's the standard, and everything else is different and must conform to a standard.
The Eurocentric standard in America is whiteness. And we have to actually state that clearly without judgment or criticism of our white counterparts. I'm about open communication. I want to have those uncomfortable dialogues, because if we don't with our white counterparts, we're really missing authentic relatedness. And it's not about blame. I can't go back and change America's history, but I can actually change and impact what's happening now and in the future. I, like Tricia, have a daughter, and she, you know, and I've stated this many times before, she has heard terrible derogatory terms about Latinos, specifically Puerto Ricans, because people assume that her color of her light skin and her beautiful, absolutely radiant blue eyes make her, or they assume that she's a white girl or a Caucasian, when she is culturally ingrained in her art, you know, through her art, and her identity is so strongly identified as a Rocka Rican, a term I coined here on your show, but really as a Puerto Rican American and a millennial who has vision and who has opportunity and wants to embrace that and be part of the American fiber of this country and the economic vitality of this city. So yes, I think that we have at this time a critical wonderful opportunity that's a teachable moment, not only among ourselves here in Rochester, but across the nation, to really address this issue, correct the erroneous, misleading facts, and have that honest, authentic dialogue.
Samantha Parisi.
Think about each day how many Americans trust news anchors. Similarly to my co-panelists, for over 22 years, my Puerto Rican grandfather and grandmother listened to Tom Brokaw each night religiously. Hispanics love news. We find out now what was in his heart the whole time. Americans don't want brown babies. Americans don't want to hear Spanish spoken while they grocery shop. What do we as Hispanics learn from this? It has never been such open season on Hispanics as it is today. We have a president that each day uses Hispanics as lynching piñatas on the evening news. Hispanics are rapist, uneducated, illegal, and trying to take your America away. The public flogging of Hispanics is daily, and it's dangerous. It's dangerous because dehumanization is exactly what a country does before a genocide. You separate families, take crying babies out of their mother's hands, you separate them and you allow them to die. You go on with your daily work as if nothing has happened. Oprah Winfrey said that young Hispanic leaders should calm down, but it's our duty to yell louder.
Now, just on that early point that you made, that you feel like you're finding out in his heart, you know, Americans don't want brown grandbabies. Brokaw was saying on the panel, Samantha, that that's what he's being told by conservatives in the Trump era, that they're worried that their children may marry someone from Latin America and produce a brown grandbaby, and that would be a bad thing. But to me, and I don't know how you felt about this, there's a lot of hard parts to this, but a really hard part was Tom Brokaw then decides, I'm going to go on Meet the Press and say that that's what I'm being told. But the solution is, well, both sides have to figure this out. Instead of, whoa, that's just racist. That's not okay. He's apparently, his view is not to say, hey, we got to draw a line there. That if you have a brown grandbaby, it's okay. As opposed to saying, look, people are worried about that. We got to placate them in some way. How do you feel when he said both sides have to kind of come together on that?
Right. This is about stirring fears in the community as part of an electoral strategy. Right now, the polls show that one of the Republican Party's best topics is immigration. And the reason why immigrant fears are testing so highly in places like Iowa and Michigan is because immigrants are moving and assimilating better than before, as opposed to when they would live together in isolated community at entry points like Texas and New York City. So his comments on fear of brown grandbabies and the browning of America shows actually that Latinos are assimilating, and multicultural and multi-ethnic U.S. baby percentages are on the rise. 1 in 7, or about 14% of infants, were multiracial or multi-ethnic in 2015, nearly triple the share in 1980. So divergent to Brokaw's idea that the cultures are conflicting with each other, the rise in multicultural racial marriages means that Hispanics are assimilating.
Hmm. You want to add to that, Tracy?
So I really feel strongly about saying something that up until now I've always hesitated and I've never wanted to come out and say it, but I feel it's necessary. So we have to remember that what's playing out at the national level isn't necessarily what's taking place at the local level. And I say this from experience. So when we say, you know, the Republican Party this and the Republican Party that, everyone knows, people know my husband's a Republican. You know, he's Irish. So when he, not that you have to be Republican because you're Irish.
No, I love
Republican
you for that.
And he's Irish. So, you know, I'm able to be in this, great situation.
Sure.
Where we have these different cultures. You know, we have a daughter who's 2, she's fully bilingual, and we just, you know, embrace diversity and everything about it. And when he heard the brown baby comment, he took great offense to that. At the same time, you know, when we say the Republican Party, we have to remember that at the national level, that's what's happening. But here at the local level, that's not happening. So, for example, I'm a registered Republican, and I've never said that publicly. But I'm going to say it now because it's important for people to know that not all Republicans are the same. Not all Republicans are bad. Not all Hispanics are Democrats. And here's your example. And the reason I share this is because we have to differentiate the two, because there is so much hate going on right now, and there's so much animosity and hostility, and there's so much, like, people can't even have conversations without, you know, if there's a difference of opinion, then the other person's considered a bad person or the other person's considered a racist. It's like, no, we got to take a step back. You know, so, you know, at the national level, maybe the Republican Party seems to be doing something, but at the local level, that is not the case. I have so many good friends who are Republicans, so many people in the Republican Party at the local level who have gone to bat for me, who have supported me personally and professionally, not only me, but my family. And so when I hear that kind of thing, you know, it bothers me to let it keep going on and on and on.
Well, Brokaw, I think, probably doesn't do a service when he says, well, I've talked to conservatives in the Trump era, and this is what they're saying.
Right.
That's a generalization that Brokaw was making.
So, but he's saying conservatives in the Trump era.
Yeah.
He's talking to conservatives who are working at the national level, whether it's in the White House or
in
D.C.
He seemed to be thinking voters. I mean, I took it as more him saying, I've been talking to voters, and this is what they're scared of. I actually think what he's really hearing is he's reading white nationalism. Because when you hear white nationalists respond to Brokaw, they say, he's right. That guy's right. If you actually read the white nationalist response, they say, hey, finally Tucker Carlson gets us. Finally Tom Brokaw gets us. And they're actually speaking about us honestly. Whereas a lot of conservatives are going, whoa, Brokaw, you do not speak for me. I do not fear having a brown grandbaby, as you say. And that seems to be what you're saying here.
Right. I mean, here in Monroe County, it's just different. You know, wherever I go somewhere, you know, I've always felt welcomed. I've always felt, I mean, again, I've received so much support. And, you know, and not just from Republicans, but from Democrats, too. I don't like to do this whole, like, oh, if you're Democrat this or Republican this. It's like, no. It's like, you know, forget the party affiliation. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like, who is the person? And what do you do? And, you know, how do you help people? I mean, my husband and I, we spend our entire time, you know, trying to help people, doing what we can to help people because so many people have helped us. And so it's just, it's really important for people to differentiate that what's playing out at the national level isn't necessarily what's taking place here.
The one rejoinder is if you look at polling, and white nationalists or otherwise, people who would say that they're scared of having brown grandbabies, if you look at the kinds of surveys that people who support hardline immigration policies, most of them self-identify not as progressive or liberal, but as conservative right now. That doesn't mean that most conservatives feel that way, but most people who do feel that way lean politically right now. Do you agree with that?
Correct. But, you know, there are other reasons they also lean that way, too. It's not just that.
Of course.
You know?
No, and that's why I think Brokaw's generalization, I think he needs to be much more specific. I think these generalized, well, I talked to a few voters and here's what they say, especially when you're sort of parroting racism and then ascribing it to a category of voters, is very dangerous.
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Steve in Brighton wants to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Evan. As someone who keeps a dictionary by the bed, two or three in the house, one in each car and one at work, until recently anyway, assimilation, the definition doesn't say you have to deny your culture. I just wanted to be clear about that because I like your show and agree with most of it, but let's be real here. I've assimilated to living in New York, but I have not denied my Southern roots. Okay, that's all I got to say. I'm not going to hang on.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Yeah. That's fair.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate that. And you're right. You're absolutely right. The context with which I was defining assimilation actually comes from Hugo Balta, the National Association of Journalists here in the States. And he was really looking at Hispanics as the concept that in which Brokaw was talking about assimilation. That's what he was looking at. I would love for you to call back and give us the proper definition because I don't have it in front of me, but it's an important topic when we use and throw around a word called assimilate because it really does, in perception and view and attitude, mean letting go of something to become something else. So I prefer the word integrate because then you're folding in, and good for you because I love your Southern accent. And I know how hard it must be to live in New York. I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised there. So I understand when I moved to Rochester, I had to learn and integrate myself into the culture here and the weather and all of those pieces. So yes, it doesn't negate your Southern roots. What his comment really means is to deny our cultural heritage, and language is part of that cultural heritage. And that is an important piece to keeping our traditions alive. My grandmother told me stories in Spanish. I then learned to hear those stories in a particular way, and then was able to translate them into the very essence and the art that I do, which is telling stories to children, to carry on that cultural tradition, to carry on the indigenous roots of my people. So I agree. Let's look at letting that word go and finding a new way to define cultural identity in America, and really, really celebrate those differences, because that really makes us a richer country.
Okay, a couple points here, because Stephen pointed Merriam-Webster, for example, or Merriam-Webster as a dictionary says, assimilation means to absorb into the cultural tradition of a population or group. Oxford, essentially the same, become absorbed and integrated into a society or culture. They do not say abandon parts of it. The problem right now, I think, is that when some people in this country hear assimilation, it has come to mean what you see in these videos that go viral from a grocery store. Speak English. People
Correct.
Are yelling at people. In Colorado, in that grocery store, the woman is yelling at that couple of other women. Speak English. There's a video that just went viral from London. A woman on the street is close to striking someone from South America, screaming, you know, that's inappropriate. Speak English here. So, first of all, a couple of points on that. If you hear people speaking privately in a grocery store and they happen not to be speaking English, it is not your business to listen to what they're saying, no matter what language they're speaking. So you don't have a right to hear what they're saying and then understand it. I mean, that's just how private conversation works. They happen to be having it in the aisle of cereal. But regardless of that, that doesn't mean that they can't speak English. Again, the stats show, especially kids, are speaking English. But let me ask all three of you. I'll start with Samantha. Are you concerned, actually, that Hispanic Americans, Latinos, are actually abandoning Spanish, even in higher rates, more and more as kids become adults? That speaking Spanish is going to happen less and less. Is that a problem if that happens?
It absolutely is a problem, and I do agree that in this context, assimilation is being used as a code word. It's about stripping the Hispanic identity. No language, speak English, no culture. And that's exactly what imperialists do. When you look at my island of Puerto Rico, it has always been occupied by imperialists. Spaniards killed the indigenous population. America raped our land and left pure chaos, and now they want the culture completely stripped. And as far as assimilation is concerned, my family lives on top of a mountain in Puerto Rico, San Sebastian del Pepino. They graduated from MIT, they went to University of Chicago, University of Michigan, and they're working here in Rochester. I am a product of assimilation.
Okay. Tricia, what about speaking Spanish? How do you view the sort of the future of bilingual families here?
So when I do hear that children of Spanish-speaking parents don't know Spanish, I do think it's disheartening. And I know, you know, over the years I've heard, and not just people who speak Spanish, but, you know, I have a really good friend from India and from other places who say that they wish they would have taught their children that second language because it's such a good thing for them for so many reasons. You know, I have a 2-year-old and I speak to her only in Spanish. And I always knew that when I had a child, I would speak to that child only in Spanish because, one, when they're little, they're like sponges. So it's the best time to speak to them in a second language. And I just know the benefits that come from knowing a second language. And the other reason I speak to her only in Spanish is because I know she's naturally going to learn English, because my husband speaks to her in English, and he'll say some Spanish phrases, but he speaks to her in English. His side of the family speaks to her in English. We have her going to school. She gets English there. And interestingly enough, you know, at the school that she goes to, they have a Spanish class once a week. And as a side note, she tried teaching the Spanish class one day. They told me she's only 2. She sat in the front of the classroom where the teacher normally sits and took the flashcards and just started teaching. And she actually had one student who was sitting there listening to her, which is funny.
Which is like your proudest parenting moment?
Yeah. So when we went to her parent-teacher conference, which sounds crazy to me because she's only 2 and it's a parent-teacher conference, but we went to the parent-teacher conference and we were talking to them, to the teachers, who are phenomenal. And I, at one point I asked, you know, do you find there are you do you have any concerns about her language skills? Does she seem to understand everything? And because they know that I speak to her only in Spanish, they're like, oh, she's great. They're like, keep doing what you're doing. She's one of their star pupils, and she's like the second youngest one in there. So that's why I speak to her in Spanish, because I know naturally she's going to get English everywhere else. And if that weren't the case, then what I would do is I would speak to her in both Spanish and English, mm-hmm. first speaking in Spanish or in English, and then interpreting in the other language. But that's how I do it at home. But I think it's disheartening if you don't know the second language and you have the opportunity to.
But one more quick point before I turn to Annette mm-hmm. on this. Brokaw's comment implies that there's an entire population of Hispanics in this country that just refuse to even try to learn English and don't think they should and won't do it. What would you say to that idea? Because Tom Brokaw saying on Meet the Press, that's not the first time I've heard someone imply that that's what's going on.
You know what? To be honest, I don't know if that's true, because I know that all the Spanish speakers that I've come across who don't know English, they've want to learn English. I mean, years ago, in 2013, I was teaching English classes in Maplewood Park to a group of Spanish speakers because they couldn't afford English classes. And I said, well, how sad. I'm like, I know the languages. So I taught the English classes in Maplewood Park. So I've never come across anyone who says who's refused yeah. or hasn't wanted to.
Yeah.
I want to piggyback on Sam's mm-hmm. comments, because the specifics of Puerto Rican Americans is very unique identity here in America. We are U.S. citizens born on the island of Puerto Rico, yet when we come here, we are denied so many rights, even on our island. But Rochester has over 3,000 new families that have migrated since Hurricane Maria. They are predominantly Spanish speakers. Many of them understand and can speak broken English. And yet, you know, they're challenged again and again and again. Puerto Rican identity is such a delicate balance in American identity. And obviously, as a Puerto Rican, Nueva Rican, born on an island of Manhattan, I grew up in a very, very, I grew up in an Italian-Irish neighborhood. and I had to go into Manhattan, into the barrio, into Spanish Harlem to connect with my culture, my people. Mommy always it brought us into our culture in a way that spoke pride. But when my mother was growing up on the island of Puerto Rico, she was forbidden to speak Spanish. It was part of, you know, the whole integration of American colonization. So that colonized mind still reaps in me, and I hope that I haven't passed that down to my own daughter. But yet, there's a constant battle against an attack of Puerto Ricans as not being American enough, even by our own people. So I must speak that as well, because truth is truth. So I think there has to be a real clarification of Puerto Ricans are very much American, and we're brand loyalist. We are the Latina women are the major consumers of our households. We pick what we buy in our kitchens and in our bathrooms and in our closets. So when I went to Hispanicize in Florida, which is a national marketing and media conference, every major company in America has Spanish-speaking commercials. They know the economic value of reaching that diverse and economically viable community. If you are not looking at Spanish as an asset within your employees, within your administration, within the governing of your organization, within the directors, you are missing a major opportunity to grow your market share and to grow your audience base. So again, we need to look at the facts that we are here and we are a major force, and subsequently having that diversity of Spanish and English adds to any business bottom line.
Okay, way late for our only break of the hour. So let's go ahead and take that. You just heard Annette Ramos, community connector at Jiva Theater Center and the new artistic director of the Latinx Arts and Culture Center and Association known as LACA. Tricia Cruz Irving, a longtime local media professional and a communications professional here in Rochester. Samantha Parisi, a Latina lawyer practicing personal injury law at Parisi and Bellavia Law Firm. Let's get that break. A lot of your feedback straight ahead. Coming up in our second hour, it's Black History Month, and a conversation with a number of local leaders and panelists who can talk about the educational system. Why is it that maybe we know some names, some important dates, but usually just a surface level? And how can we change that? What ought we know about Black history? And what are some interesting and important facts that get left out? That's next hour. All right, just want to let you know that this is the first day of our fall membership campaign, as Megan Mack and I have been telling you. And in fact, are you supposed to grab your microphone? I have no idea. Are you going to grab your microphone? Should we tell them that it's the first day of the fall membership campaign? We're on the fly here. Hi, Megan.
Hi, I couldn't hear anything you just said. So, yes, I think you said it's the first day.
I didn't know if we're supposed to do this. But before we get to the phone calls, we're full up. This is a perfect example of the kinds of conversations that spark a lot of different feedback from a lot of different quarters. That's exactly what we try to do every day.
Absolutely. Every single day here on Connections. We try to give everyone in our community an opportunity to weigh in as well. And, of course, we always open the phone lines to your questions and comments. We have a number of people waiting. This is your public radio station. This is your program. We try to touch on issues that are important to you and incorporate your voice as often as we can. And that's not something you can find really on any other local media outlet, I don't think, the way that we do here on Connections. We are one of the few communities in the nation that has a local talk show. So if you value Connections, if you listen every day or here and there, call and vote with your dollars, 454-6300. Keep us here every day. Keep hearing Evan every day and our team here to help bring you valuable programming. We did get a comment come in, Evan, that I can share with you and our listeners. This is from Dennis. He says, your show is one of the very few I consider time well spent as our Doctor Who and Brenda Tremblay. So a shout out to Doctor Who, Brenda Tremblay.
And Connections.
And Connections. 454-6300.
And by the way, I said fall membership campaign. Let me correct the record. I'm looking outside the window. Spring membership campaign.
Spring today,
in
February.
It is. Okay, to your phone calls we go. I'm going to start. And if you're on the line, we'll get through as many as we can. Julia in Rochester first. Go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, hi, Evan. This is the first time caller. And I am going to present my view, my personal view, about what assimilation means to me as an immigrant. To me, it means allegiance to a country that I now have called home. What that means probably requires more than an hour of discussion on the radio. However, the outcome to me of that is a prosperity of a nation that I've come to appreciate and hope to preserve it for generations to come. I just wanted to have one more comment about the language issue, which seems to be a very hot issue these days. I have experiences where a foreign language is spoken in public. And my experience is that not, people don't mind when you speak a foreign language in a public place, but they do mind when you speak it at a loud tone. And I think people in the excitement of being able to use their personal, their native tongue to communicate with, you know, people that understand that, they forget that aspect of public display of respect. I think it is very disrespectful for people to act as if they were in a place with nobody around and they speak at a very, very loud tone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's it for now. There are other aspects that I don't have to, I don't think we have the time to listen to that.
Okay.
That's my view.
Thank you, Julia. I appreciate the phone call. So her concern is that not necessarily in speaking foreign language, foreign language, another language besides English, let me put it that way, in public, but when it's done so at a high volume.
Please, Tricia.
So, I need to laugh for a couple of reasons, because one, it is true. As a Latina, when I'm speaking to somebody in my family, we speak very loud. And one time my husband said to me, he's like, why were you yelling? I was like, oh, no, we weren't yelling. This is just how we talk. Or when we're in the car driving and I say to him, oh, okay, just, you know, I'm calling home or I'm calling my uncle or my aunt, so it's going to get loud. Because that's just how we speak. But Another example is, 2 weeks ago, I was at the gym, and one of my best friends, who is from India, was there, and she was speaking really loud, so much so in the locker room that I actually had to say to her, oh my gosh, you're speaking really loud. So it wasn't necessarily, you know, I just give those two examples. I mean, I laugh, you know, because we speak really loud. I mean, if it bothers other people, I don't know what you say to that.
Yeah, I mean, look, close talkers bother me. People who speak English and are really loud or obnoxious bother me. I don't know. But, Julie, I appreciate the perspective. Thank you for calling the program. Let me get Brooke next on the line. Go ahead, Brooke.
Hi, I just want to say I'm an immigrant, too. I migrated here about 30 years ago as a child. And I know you're speaking about the assimilation, but I do prefer the word integration. And as it terms of culture, my culture was maintained in the home. Like, when I came here, I think it was a different time and a different perspective of how people viewed America. I felt it as a privilege. I didn't come here, you know, just the joy of being here was more than enough for me. So my main goal was to try to be part of the whole process, be part of the whole community, and not so much put my culture out there. Some things I couldn't avoid because of my accent or the way I looked that, you know, brought attention to me and questions and so forth. But all throughout my life, when I was younger, it was to maintain that. And I was maintaining at home. So I just wanted to, I guess, ask the panel, if that a lot of the cultural identity and maintaining a cultural identity, isn't that something that should be focused more on the home and not be at a responsibility, but be a burden, not a burden, but be upon the culture of U.S. to maintain. And I also wanted to mention that I knew one of your guests mentioned that, you know, on the national level, there's a different story compared to the local level. I think Latin culture is widely accepted in the U.S. I mean, the music, the clothes, the dancing, the people, the actors. I have never in my, you know, travels all over the United States really see where there's a resistance to Latin, especially the women, are very beautiful. So I just want to mention that. So I don't see where that's coming from. I've traveled all over and I've felt, you know, the love for Latin culture and Latin people. And even going to the Latin cultures themselves, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, all throughout the Central America. But that's all I want to mention.
But Brooke, I want to make sure I understand one thing before you go. When you say, isn't it the responsibility of the parents or the home to maintain culture, I don't want to misinterpret. Are you saying that cultural identity is okay, but sort of it should be maintained at home and in the public sphere it's less appropriate? I'm trying to understand.
That's why I said I'm from a different time in the United States. When I came to America and the way I was brought up about my culture, my culture is maintained in the home. It wasn't something that was displayed loudly outside of the home because we had the understanding, like, we wouldn't be understood. It would be issues because people don't understand our culture. There'd be misunderstandings of you know, communication and so forth. So the best thing to keep us, I guess, and I said this is a different time. It's 30 years ago coming to America. The best thing for us was to simulate, was to learn the culture, was to become part of the American umbrella, the American blanket, as best as we can. And I've noticed throughout the time as I've been living here that America eventually starts to adapt a little bit by a little bit of people's cultures, small parts of it. For example, the salsa music in Latin America, or the I'm from the Caribbean, so a lot of our clothes, a lot of our dancing was somewhat adapted into mainstream America. That made me a little bit more comfortable to say, oh, wow, okay, they're accepting that. But to this, I just wanted to explain that in the sense that it was a different time then. For now, I can't really say because I've been here for 30 years, so I have a different perspective of how immigrants are feeling and what their thoughts are coming in.
Yeah, okay, Brooke, thank you. I mean, I think what I'm hearing from Brooke is similar to the quote I read earlier from Carla Monterosso, the CEO of Code 2040, which is the idea that when you're in public, when you're applying for jobs, you maybe have to suppress some of your culture, and that the idea is, at home, okay, that's where you do that. The issue I have is that as the white guy at the table in this conversation, I've never had to have a moment in my life where I felt like, I don't know if this is a... this is uncool. This company's not going to like it, the way I talk or what I wear or the music I listen to, whatever. I mean, that's just, it's sort of normalized. Whereas the notion of it's okay at home, and I think Brooke is making a good faith point. I mean, he's talking about his experience. I'm just a little uncomfortable with it because it means he has to do something that I've never had to do, and he could be penalized for doing something that I would not be penalized for. That's sort of my observation. I could be wrong.
But that will never change no matter what. So, for example, you said you're the only white person here at the table.
Yeah, yeah.
A white person will never know what it's like to be in one of our shoes.
Sure.
At the same time, though, that's not to say that other people from other races or ethnicities haven't experienced their own challenges. I mean, it's hard to have a to elaborate on this with only, 8 minutes left. But, it's just some people will never have the same experiences.
But I don't think it's okay.
I'm not saying it's okay either.
To say, you've got to try to do what amounts to white passing if you're applying for a job or if you're in the public sphere or if you don't want a social cost, whereas I never have to try to pass as something I'm...
So I want to jump in here One of the things that I've been really looking at is systemic racism and hiring practices. And that really deals with unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. What is the standard and norm in your organization or institution, and then if you don't meet that standard, you're literally not hired or considered not a good candidate for that job. So we have to actually raise the conversation of race at the hiring level. How are the human resources department hiring people? If they see my Latina-ness as an asset, they're going to benefit from that. But if they see my Latina-ness as not fitting in and disrupting the status quo of white privilege, they're missing out. So that's one. And I've recently encountered these experiences for the first time in my adult life. So I'm very aware of that. Also, I think that there has to be an understanding that Rochester is the second largest city of Latinos in New York State. Second largest. We have over 88,000 Latinos here. Yet, we are not seen as a major asset in this community. And I applaud you. I applaud Channel 8 for literally willingness to educate our general public about our culture and the richness and the contributions. The fact that Hilda Escher is the first Latina to win an Athena Award, I celebrate that because that says that road and that path is now open for all Latinas. I look at Sam, I look at my daughter, I even look at Isabel, who's only 2 years old. I want them to know that as Latina women, their culture is an asset to their bankability, to their economic viability, and to any company who sees that as an asset in the bottom line. So I'm talking economic, but I'm also talking cultural inclusion, cultural appreciation, and cultural value. We are a very divided city right now between black and white. Latinos don't even have a voice in that conversation right now. So I'm stating these are the kinds of uncomfortable conversations we have to have. We have to say, let's look at those ugly issues. And not once do we ever feel that you're the white man in the room and that you represent all the evil woes that each of us have experienced. We feel your authentic desire to understand and your willingness to say, you don't know, teach me. That opens a real conversation for celebrating every culture.
Sam, you want to jump in? Go ahead. Down to about our last 2 minutes. I've got to keep it tight. Go ahead.
I just think that language is such an important component of identity. And it's important that people do maintain their culture in their homes, but also that they bring it out into the public so that it begins to become the norm and that people don't label it as a public display of disrespect when someone is showing their cultural identity.
Yeah, I mean, I guess where I'm going here, Patricia, is I want people to live how they want to live. I just don't want there to be a social cost or a life cost, job cost for some people, but not others. And what I'm hearing, I don't want to speak for you. It sounds like you think realistically we may never get to that point, where there won't be? Well, I don't know.
Okay, so you put it's 12:56. So
50 seconds, solve everything.
So it's not that I'm saying it's okay for anyone to lose something.
Yeah, sure.
What I'm saying is that when you get people at a table, regardless of what color they are, we've all had different experiences, mm-hmm. personal and professional, and some of us will never know what it's like. Some people will never know what it's been like for me when I was growing up as a child. Just like, you know, I will never know what it may have been like for somebody, you know, other people. So I think the last thing that I would like people to remember, at least coming from my end,
yeah.
is that we all have different experiences. And it's important to remember that and, you know, just to be respectful of people's, you know, differences. And, you know, when we have conversations, you know, with some exceptions, try to see where the other person's coming from. Not some things that go to the extreme or say you should assimilate, but we all have different experiences, so we're not all going to feel or think the same.
Did you plan to come out on the show today?
Oh, my God.
As a Republican?
No way.
Yay. You did it.
No way. Are you kidding?
We love you anyway.
It's official. People heard it. They're listening.
I know, but, you know, because I want to show. People who know me know. Everything I've done for this community and to help people, and that I want to show that not everyone's, you know, the same. That's why I did that, and, you know, I just...
No angry emails. Come back. You're welcome anytime. Thank you. Trisha Cruz Irving. Great having
Thank
Trisha Cruz Irving. Also great having Samantha Parisi from Parisi and Bellavia. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Annette Ramos from LACA. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you.
Short break. More connections coming up.